Now it's the week in Washington. We're going to check in on several developing stories in national politics. Congress is continuing to face pressure to pass some kind of coronavirus relief package, as well as a government funding measure. And President-elect Biden continues to announce picks for his incoming administration. This week, we've learned more about what he'd like his economic and communications teams to look like. And yesterday, Attorney General Bill Barr was interviewed by the AP and said that the Department of Justice investigation into possible widespread election fraud, such as the current president has said happened, yielded nothing that would overturn the results of the election. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this statement from the Attorney General? Does that what does it make you think about ongoing challenges to election results? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sarah Ferris is a congressional reporter for Politico. Sarah, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with Attorney General Barr. This started last month when Barr announced that U.S. attorneys around the country could look into irregularities in voting. What did we hear from him this week about the investigation results?
That's right. So Attorney General Barr gave a pretty blockbuster interview to the Associated Press this week where he declared that there was no widespread election fraud, basically contradicting what President Trump and his allies have been saying ever since November 3rd. He said that U.S. attorneys and FBI agents were following up on specific complaints that they had heard from around the country. But he said, as they've been reviewing that, there hasn't been anything that actually presents itself as evidence that there has been election fraud. So this was a really, really big deal. There's a lot of Trump allies who did not expect AG Barr to go against the president in this way. He's been basically on the president's side lockstep throughout his term. So this was a pretty big deal.
What have we heard from the president, his campaign, and his supporters about the attorney general's comments?
So Rudy Giuliani, who, of course, is a Trump ally, released a pretty scathing statement right after the fact, saying there was, quote, no semblance, end quote, of an investigation by the attorney general's office, basically saying that they weren't doing enough. They're pressuring Barr and others to do more, to look into some of these allegations of fraud that the Trump team has been making. Right now, as we speak, the president is taking part in a lengthy speech that he called potentially the most important of his presidency, where he seems to just be repeating claim after claim of this unsubstantiated election fraud. So that's happening right now. We'll be, you know, looking into what comes out of that, if anything. But right now, what I'm hearing from my colleagues who've been watching that is that there's nothing new to that. He's just repeating these claims. And, you know, I think we can interpret that as a reaction to what Barr came out and said to the Associated Press this week. I think, you know, the president is of course, going to be upset that one of his top allies went out against him in this way, which, you know, Democrats in Congress would say, well, this is confirming the results of a Democratic election. And why would something that the attorney general says, you know, saying this was a safe election, why is this something the president is rattled by? But of course, his own reelection is on the line here.
There's been a lot of attention on Republicans in Congress. Has there been much in the way of movement since the initial round of, you know, some Republican senators who you'd kind of expect to be the first to recognize Biden's election? Has there been any kind of movement among Republicans who hadn't spoken up yet?
So what we've been seeing is this kind of awkward dance where established Republicans, some of the more institutionalists, are saying, look, you know, elections have consequences. President Trump did not win in as many states as he did. And that means Joe Biden is the victor here. But of course, there's this undercurrent among Republicans who are looking to these really crucial Georgia Senate races in January. So there's a large chunk of the Republican conference in the Senate in particular. You know, those are the voices that really matter, given they're still in charge of the Senate over there. They've been really careful to still say, you know, if Biden wins, we're starting to see, you know, some top Republicans start to mention, you know, the new administration, not specifically citing out Biden by name, but just noting, you know, there will be a new administration coming in January. But for the most part, they really want to remain lockstep behind Trump. They are really looking to, you know, basically try to bring out the Trump base into these two Georgia races. And so you can't do anything that's going to really tick off the president and you know, cause him to erupt in some way against Senate Republicans when you have these, you know, as I said, really critical elections that will determine the fate of the majority. Right now, it looks like the Senate will remain Republican. Democrats have this kind of long shot bid of winning over two seats. But again, you know, there's a reluctance of Senate Republicans to go out and go against Trump when so much is on the line.
And in Georgia, now we've got the president criticizing the Republican governor, Republican secretary of state, pushback from them and other Republican officials in the election administration. And then today, the attorney Sidney Powell, who was formerly on the president's team, is now off it, but still filing lawsuits, trying to overturn election results, held a rally. And some of the rally speakers were encouraging people to, in effect, boycott the Georgia Senate races if candidates there, Republican candidates, didn't take Trump's side in election disputes. So that's got to worry Republicans if they're telling Republicans are telling other Republicans not to vote for Republicans.
Yeah, it's really hard to stay up to date in the latest twists and turns of this. I mean, as you said, you know, you have Republicans in the state who are kind of arguing with election officials, arguing with each other. And there's just these, you know, really big, you know, conflicts that are coming to a head at this time that really Republicans do not want to miss their shot. So I think there's going to have to be a unification of the party here. You know, there's not that many weeks left. And I think there's going to be some more pressure to have, you know, Trump and his folks campaigning there, doing more appearances, that sort of thing. But of course, on the ground level, there's just so many different personalities and different disputes that are breaking out. You know, so it's definitely going to be one to watch.
We're talking to Sarah Ferris, congressional reporter for Politico. It's our weekly look at some of the biggest news in national politics. Coming up, stop me if you've heard this one before. Members of Congress are trying to negotiate a COVID-19 economic relief package. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Democrats and Republicans in the House and Senate come together on a plan? Small plan? Big plan? Targeted, focused, or broad strokes? What do you want to see in such a plan if it can be reached? What's riding on it for you? Expiring unemployment benefits, that kind of thing, or your business needing help from the government? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Right now, we're picking up our Week in Washington conversation with Sarah Ferris from Politico. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should Congress pass a COVID-19 economic relief package? Do you think they can? What would you want it to look like if they do pass something? Call in quick at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, Sarah, this has been a perennial topic on this segment every week. What is the latest on COVID-19 economic relief negotiations?
So I don't want to call it a breakthrough yet, but we did see some really significant movement just a couple of hours ago from the Democrats. So there's been basically the biggest flurry of negotiations that we've seen since before the election happening this week. Of course, members are back on the Hill for the first time since before Thanksgiving, and this is really their final chance to get something done. So naturally, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of people trying to, you know, finally get something moving. And we saw this week a group of bipartisan lawmakers put forward a $908 billion package, which is kind of on the lower end of what's been talked about on the Democratic side, much lower than their initial ask. So basically, they put out this number, 908, you know, thinking this could be maybe a magic number that gets both sides to the table. And today we saw Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer basically endorsing this bill. They're throwing their weight behind this $908 billion number. So the big question is whether Senate Republicans are willing to come up to this number. They've been talking a lot about a $500 billion package. It's, of course, much narrower than what this bipartisan group is talking about. So that's the number of the week, $908 billion. We have a couple of days. You know, they're hoping to get an agreement by the weekend to see if this is something they can put on the floor next week. I mean, I don't know what to say at this point. We've been here so many times before. It's just a matter of, you know, just seeing if the looming threat of these deadlines again at the end of December is going to make a difference here.
Are there any common themes here? Like everybody agrees that if they pass something, it's got to include X?
There's really not. And that's kind of what makes this so hard, right? I mean, you have a lot of consensus behind direct payments. That's the $1,200 to most American families that we saw come out earlier this year. You know, there is a lot of consensus behind that, but not everybody. There's a lot of consensus behind some kind of additional unemployment insurance. You'll remember earlier this year, it was $600 per week going out to help millions of people who had lost their jobs because of the pandemic. The number that would be replaced with has been anywhere from $200 a week, $300 a week. Democrats want it to be, you know, let's stick with the 600 or maybe go to 500. So there's all kinds of big general themes of this package that have a lot of support behind them. Unemployment insurance. Who doesn't want unemployment insurance for people who lose jobs in a pandemic? But the question is, you know, what's in the details? And, you know, you have a lot of skittish Republicans, these deficit hawks that have been kind of, you know, waiting to oppose something all these months and are coming out of the woodwork now. And, you know, it's just one of those really ugly fights. There's so many people involved. So many people have an emotional, have a financial, have a personal stake in this. And it's just not going to be easy to try to get done in the next 8 days in session. But that's what they're trying to do.
Let's bring on a caller. Connie is with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Connie, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Connie?
Well, I just wanted to comment on how I do hope that they can pass a stimulus package again very, very soon, similar to the one we had last April.
How does this affect you, Connie, if I may ask?
Sure. I have been unemployed now for 7 months. That is, I'm still on furlough from my full-time job. I do have a part-time job that's been helping a great deal. But, you know, the $600 a week, it was not anything near my regular salary, but it did help so much. And I know a lot of the businesses are like the one I work for, where the first stimulus helped a lot, but still the clients and the work isn't coming back like it used to. So we still need help out here.
Connie, good luck to you. Thank you for calling in to share that with us. And that's, I think, who a lot of people in Wisconsin, in Congress, Sarah, have in mind. Those people who are unemployed or their businesses shut down or severely hampered long term because of the pandemic, right?
Exactly. I mean, there's so many parts of the initial CARES Act, that's what they're calling it, that over $2.2 trillion bill that was passed back in April, the only substantial aid package that has been passed through this pandemic. We haven't seen any new money since April. You know, there's a lot of really good things in that package that people said worked great. The problem is not everything did, not everything was right. And so there's members who just are reluctant to do that same thing again. And that's why we've been having this fight after fight is, you know, how do we improve the last package? What parts of it were unnecessary? You know, how do we make sure that money is really put to a good use? And that has caused these, you know, 6, 7, 8 months of delay here.
Thanks for that call, Connie. And just our last few moments, Sarah, the Biden team keeps emerging, the president-elect, to talk about who's going to be in his cabinet and other key posts. Briefly, what has struck you about what we've heard this week?
So this week, the Biden transition team unveiled their economic team, which, of course, is going to be such a huge part of the first 100 days of the Biden administration, the first 4 years of the Biden administration, because that's how long we're going to be seeing the impact of this recession. And Treasury Secretary, the nominee is Janet Yellen. She will be the first woman to hold that post, which is really remarkable. She's a really remarkable person. She's held all sorts of high level economic posts under Republican presidents, under Democratic presidents. She's really well respected on both sides of the aisle. She has held a pretty aggressive stance in terms of, you know, getting the economy going. And, you know, I think a lot of people think she'll be a good fit to take over for this, you know, really, really nasty economic downturn that she's going to be inheriting. The other really notable person is Neera Tanden, who is the nominee to lead the Office of Management and Budget, which is a wonky office, but really one of the most important branches of the White House. This is, of course, controlling for the entire federal budget, working really closely with Congress. Neera Tanden is remarkable, not only because she would be the first woman of color to hold that post, but she also she comes from a left of center think tank. She's had all kinds of positions in Democratic circles and is really well known and hailed by many progressives, but she really is controversial to a lot of Republicans. Her positions are not quite as middle of the line as Janet Yellen, and I think that nomination is going to encounter a lot of resistance in the Senate, which, as we were discussing earlier, unless there's a really unique scenario in the Georgia elections in January, will be retained by the Republicans. And Republicans will essentially have veto power over this nominee. So there's a lot of people watching to see if the Neera Tanden nomination can survive. Seems to be the only one so far that we've heard from the Biden administration that might not get through the Senate.
Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Sarah Ferris, congressional reporter for Politico, joining us for our weekly look at the top stories in national politics.